On this edition of Inside Boxing Live, we're going to talk some headlines, some big fights were made on the women's side of things, some injuries. We're going to rate the January fights, and then Gervonta Tank Davis is in action this weekend, and we're going to talk about that and more. It's another edition of Inside Boxing Live. What is up, everybody? Welcome in to another edition of Inside Boxing Live, a product of John Boy Media. I am Dan Canobio. He is the former world champion, Chris Algieri. First show of the new year, Chris. Are you a big New Year's resolution guy? How's everything going over in sunny Florida?
Going great. I'm missing New York a little bit. Not the weather, but my people. So I had to represent this morning.
As we record this, it is going to touch 64 degrees in New York City. I don't know what is going on. I'll take it. It probably means terrible things for the environment and all that. But, yeah, we're hitting 64 in New York City. So, it feels like Florida weather.
It's a little chilly for me. I'm a nice balmy 83 today. So, I'm going
to. Yeah. I've seen your Instagram stories. I've seen what you were doing over the break. And that's awesome. Some R&R. We were freezing over here. But today's actually pretty nice. A lot to get into on this episode, so let's jump right in. Obviously, Tank Davis versus Hector Luis Garcia fight is still on. We'll touch on that a little bit later. Breakdown and also talk about what happened over his break. The fight was in jeopardy, but it's obviously going on. Some headlines, though. Some housekeeping before we get into all the big stuff is this fight was just announced. Matchroom, February 4th, MSG Theater. It seems like these women's fights are becoming more relevant, and they're becoming bigger and bigger, and they're not afraid to put multiple women's fights on the same card, and we're getting that. Amanda Serrano versus Erica Cruz for Undisputed at 126. Alicia Bumgarner versus Elham Mekaled for Undisputed at 130. Scott Nicholson is on the card. Rashad Matthews on the card. Ramala Ali, Richardson Hitchens. This is an awesome card. Just got announced by Matchroom. I'm excited to see Serrano go for Undisputed at 126, because that brings us one step closer to the rematch with Katie Taylor. Alicia Bumgarner also going for Undisputed, even though they got Choi out of the way and they had to do some little finagling with the WBA. But Chris, this is another massive card for women's boxing, and it's going to happen right in our backyard at Madison Square Garden. I love this.
Yeah, it seems like Matchroom is trying to see if this formula is something that can stick. You know, they put the women's card on last April, and it was a phenomenal card, fantastic. It sold, it was packed in there. We spoke about that on the show many times. They're trying to see if they can do it again, if they can catch that lightning in a bottle and do it one more time and make a real run at this and really give these women a platform.
Yeah, I love it. And the Serrano fight is obviously the headliner. It's almost like dueling main events, but Serrano's the headliner. She was adamant about wanting to, you know, make history at featherweight. You know, she fought her last fight with Katie Taylor was at 135. That's way above her natural weight. So it'd be interesting for her to think of the year Amanda Serrano could potentially have here. And she becomes Undisputed at 126. She's a heavy favorite over Erica Cruz. And then they get that rematch with Katie Taylor, which from all signs looks like it's going to happen next, maybe at Croke Park in Ireland in front of a massive crowd. If she can somehow win that fight, you're looking at Undisputed at 126, right into Undisputed at 135 for Serrano, and already has a career that's extremely decorated. But imagine that at this stage in her career to be able to go Undisputed back-to-back, two different weight classes.
It can only be done in women's boxing. Mm-hmm. A man couldn't do that. So it's pretty cool that she's going for it. She's really reaching for gold. I mean, it would be historic, and I don't think it would ever be broken, especially by a man. But yeah, she should go for it. All the power to her. She is a beast, and doesn't matter what weight class she fights in, I mean, she brings it.
Yeah, and Lisa Bumgarner fighting at 130, Undisputed. There's some talks with Bumgarner maybe fighting Serrano if something happens with this Katie Taylor fight not happening. Bumgarner obviously. The thing with the women's too, with the weight, is I feel like they're able to jump around the weights a little bit easier. Why is that? You know, it's different than the men too. Like, I feel like, you know, Serrano has no problem going to 135. Bumgarner, I feel like, could fight at 135, maybe even 140. I feel like it's very easy for them to hop around and find like the biggest opportunities, which, you know, you can't say the same for the men.
It's power. The difference is power, and that's the difference between men and women. It's just the fourth generation. Amanda Serrano has power. She's one of the few women out there who can really, really punch. She has not got power. That carries with you. We've said that before. Some, you know, the power gets carried. Like Manny Pacquiao was able to, you know, he was a puncher at 26 all the way up to, you know, 47. He was knocking guys out. So, you know, when you have power, it's a little bit different. You can jump around. You can, the body size doesn't make it not much of a difference if the other person can't punch. So Amanda Serrano has that ability because of her power. And Baumgartner too, you know, she can punch. So she would be able to fight at a higher weight and still be successful.
Yep, that's what's going on. And the women's side of things, so February 4th, we're going to have it loaded. I already talked to Skye Nicholson. She's coming back to the office, coming back to the studio. I'm trying to get Baumgartner in studio. Nice. Jake Paul and Eddie Hearn will be back. So that's so much for that little lawsuit. Remember, we're talking about the Glenn Feldman Matchroom Most Valuable Promotions lawsuit. So clearly they're able to make the biggest fights, and that's what's most important. No one gives a crap about lawsuits, and just give us these big fights. Give us Amanda Serrano, Katie Taylor, too. Women's boxing, it's rolling right now. I wish we could say the same for the men, but I will remain optimistic. Jermell Charles, a bad segue because we're talking about a fight that is not happening. Jermell Charles versus Tim Zhu is off, supposed to happen at the end of this month, January 28th. This is a huge bummer. Charlo broke his hand while sparring. A lot of people were like, well, show me some evidence. He posted the doctor's note. That's like the world we're living in where, you know, his word isn't enough. This sucks. Jermell Charlo versus Tim Zhu was a fight I was really looking forward to, and now they're saying 8 weeks that Charlo has to rest before he even starts up any type of training. So we're looking at maybe May or June for this fight to go back on. Tim Zhu's looking at other opponents. He's already in the States. Obviously, he's from Australia, so he's been here training. He's going to look for another opponent. This just stalls more things at 154. Hand injuries are no joke. You can attest to that.
Yeah, I've had many hand injuries in my day. I've had fractures that required surgery and fixations, and other ones that didn't. Either way, they take a long time to heal, and for you to get back to your true form, you never really know. So even if saying, "Oh, well, we'll be back in May," you don't know that. If he comes back too soon, re-injures that hand, or if he just doesn't feel like it's the structure is there, there's no reason to go on from there. You've got to make sure that these are the tools. You got to make sure that they are you know ready for war.
So I don't know what's going to go on 154. Charlo has all the belts there. Injuries give you a little time with these sanctioning bodies that are just like prying, trying to get some more sanctioning fees out of these fighters. So Charlo now, who fought once in 2022, was going to be out for a significant amount of time. I don't know what Zhu does. If you were Tim Zhu, what do you do? Do you wait? I don't think he wants to do that. Do you fight a softer touch? Which would be, this is almost like the Tank and Ryan situation, or maybe risk, you know, maybe losing or getting hurt, or would you try to, you know, iron sharpen iron, find a top 10-ish 154-pounder if you're Tim Zhu?
I like when guys stay active. You know, I'd love to say it's a fight, I'll go fight some stuff, but I would go and get an easy touch. Go back home, fight over in Australia.
No, he wants to fight here.
Some Australian power to puff. Yeah, well, I mean, if he fights here, he's got to fight somebody real. He's not gonna get an easy touch here. You know, he can go home and get an easy touch just to stay busy. But I like the guy to stay active, even if it's against someone that, you know, isn't really up to snuff. You get a training camp under your belt, you make the weight, you get out there, you get that confidence. So I'd rather see him busy than just wait.
Let's get some good news. Amanda Stanionis versus Virgil Ortiz now has a date, and
good
it also
fight.
Has
good
a
fight.
State. It's going down in Texas on March 18th. Love that. It looks like Jack Catterall and
fight.
Yeah, it's an awesome fight. We'll talk a lot more about it once we get closer to it. Jack Catterall, Josh Taylor, that's about to be announced officially. That's looking like March 4th. There was another fight that got announced too that's about to be announced. But we're starting to see the schedule kind of form. You know, it's only January, and there are some good fights in January too. But we're seeing it's almost like a puzzle, and the pieces are starting to fall in. I think the biggest puzzle piece of the first quarter is going to be Tyson Fury versus Usyk. They're talking about that fight being no later than like the middle of March. We get that out of the way. That is a huge event, and I love that. And, you know, that would just kick things off. That's the official first big fight of the year, and there's some other big fights too, but that's the big one for the first quarter. But we're seeing a lot of movement, and we're seeing some fights be falling into place, and that's what we want, right? Speaking of heavyweights, did you see this? Anthony Joshua Eddie Hearn has come out and spoken about what Joshua's time, like his goals for him or his plan is. They're looking for a fight in April. Versus a top 15-ish type of fighter. Then they want to go against Dillian White in the summer. And then in the fall, he'll be ready for the Furies, the Wilders, the upper echelon type of heavyweights. And this is insane to me because think of the Anthony Joshua timeline, what we've seen. After the Usyk loss, there was talks of him fighting in December. Remember, we're going to get him right in there in December, possibly against Fury. He doesn't want to waste any time. Then that got moved, obviously, with everything that happened with the Fury fight. Then we moved into, all right, Joshua's going to go right into a Dillian White fight, or he's going to fight someone, you know, in January or February. That is being pushed aside. Now he is taking on maybe a Jermaine Franklin type of opponent. And then they're building this up into this Dillian White summer showdown, which doesn't really need that type of marination. And then we'll see where the chips settle with Fury, Usyk, Wilder for a fall match for Joshua. I'd be shocked if he fights three times in this year, but the timeline, it just keeps moving for this guy. It's very, very interesting.
We're going to have to pull the archives, go back to one of our shows. I literally said this is what they were going to do. I said that he was going to fight somebody soft. He's going to fight a UK guy, someone like Dillian White or something, and then he's going to fight Fury a year from now. And this is what they're saying. Maybe Eddie Hearn's been watching our show, and he's still my
Eddie watches.
And he's like, yeah, so, I mean, that definitely could have been we got to go back because I said that exact thing, and I'm not surprised. We'll see if it happens. A lot can happen in a year's time, especially heavyweights, but
yeah. I didn't know like the Fury Joshua thing, like I wasn't about to fall for it, but then like I started seeing more and more of it and like kind of fell into the trap. But I didn't think they were gonna do a build up for a Dillian White rematch. I mean, in the summer. But I understand what Matchroom is doing. Like, listen, come on. This guy still puts asses in seats, he's still a big time star.
Mm-hmm.
So Fury and Usyk are gonna be tangled up. They could fight twice, who knows? Wilder's probably gonna fight Andy Ruiz. So let's fill up a few more
good
stadiums.
Fight.
Yeah, there's no good fights. Let's fill up a few stadiums in the meantime, and then we'll see where the chips fall in the later half of 2023 for Joshua. I still want to see him fight Wilder. That's the fight to me.
Eddie's thinking the cash cow needs to graze, and that's exactly what's going on here. He's making that money. He's pulling in that cash while he can. We don't know how long the timeline's going to be for Anthony Joshua. You know, he loses to Usyk twice. If he loses to Tyson Fury, where does he go from there? Now they get to stretch him out a little bit longer just in case he doesn't win that fight. Make some more money. In the Dillian White fight, it'll be an entertaining fight, and it'll also be a good litmus test to see how much, you know, Joshua has left. If he comes out there and blasts out Dillian White, that's going to get people very excited for that Tyson Fury fight.
Yeah, I get it.
Not that they're not.
Yeah,
anyway.
We get it. We get how the business works. Most fans that are listening and watching understand it. But it's just, like, funny watching the backtracking and the timeline shifting for Joshua. But you're right. It is. I think we said this in the past, too. If he doesn't knock out White, then it's like, okay, I think we need to if he wins a decision, they're going to have to rush into and like, let's find the biggest name out there, whether it's Wilder or it's Fury or so. We'll see that. That's the latest with Anthony Joshua in the heavyweight division. Let's get into our January fights. This is the first week of January. Let's take a look at the schedule and we'll play a little game where we rate these fights from 1 to 10. And we'll start with this weekend. Tank versus Hector Garcia. I'll start it off. I'll give it a solid 7. A solid 7. I think that Garcia is going to push Tank a little bit. Anytime Tank's in the ring, I like to watch the guy fight. I'm giving it a solid 7. What would you rate Tank versus Hector Garcia?
I was between 7 or 8, so I'll go 7.5. I like the fight. Like you said, I love watching Tank. He's one of my favorite young fighters to watch out there. He's entertaining. Between the build-up and the way he fights, he's a very entertaining guy. And listen, Hector Garcia can fight. This is not an easy fight at all. And I think it's going to be a really good idea of where Tank is at, you know, at this stage of his career and at this weight, and how he's going to hang out with the rest of these guys.
Yeah, we'll have a lot more on that fight in just a second. Boots Ennis versus Karen Chukhadzian, which is also on this card. Giving it a 5. I like Boots. Obviously want to see him step up in competition. This is the highest ranked guy they had in the IBF. solid five. I'm not super excited about it, but it's also another chance to watch Ennis do his thing.
Yeah, I would give this a zero if it wasn't for Boots. I love watching that guy fight, too. I think he's super, super talented, but, you know, three?
Okay, all right. Demetrius Andrade, your boy, versus Damon Nicholson.
My dude.
Nicholson has the claim to fame that he broke up Edgar Berlanga's KO streak. Andrade, 35 years old, quit the PBC. We don't know for how long, but I like you said a while back, like they don't do one-offs. So maybe we see Andrade at 160, 168 area where PBC has some good names. I'll give this like a 5.5 because I want to see where Andrade goes next from here. I like to see him step on the gas pedal here. If it's like the third fight of a pay-per-view, I'm cool with it. So 5.5 for me.
Yeah, it's probably worth a 5, but I'll give it a 6. You get 1 point for being my guy. So I love watching Andre fight. He hasn't fought in a while. So and honestly, Nicholson is a tough guy. You know, he's been in there tough. His only losses are to really good guys. I can't really see him beating Andre, but it gives us a good idea of where he's at and what he's going to look like at 168.
Let's go to next week, January 14th. I love this fight. F.A. Ajagba is fighting Stephen Shaw. Stephen Shaw stepped in. I forgot who pulled out. Oscar Rivas got sick or something. So I actually liked Ajagba versus Rivas, but I like this even more. Stephen Shaw is someone that I've seen fight a lot. He's signed with DiBella, so I've worked a bunch of his fights, Broadway Boxing. He just fought this past November in New York City. I think he's ready for this type of test. I think it's a winnable fight for Stephen Shaw. Ajagba, we saw in there numerous times for Top Rank, and he lost to Frank Sanchez last year. Solid 7.8. I'm giving decimals now. 7.8, Ajagba-Shaw, ESPN, regular ESPN main event. Like this one a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Shaw can win this fight. I'm going to be here in Verona for this fight, calling the undercard.
Oh, nice.
For Top Rank. Going up to sunny Verona, New York.
Hotel though. It's not a bad resort. It's a nice resort.
No, not at all.
Like Turning Stone.
Not easy to get to because you got to fly into Syracuse and then drive down. Turning Stone is actually a really nice place, but it's always in the middle of January. We're trudging through snow every January to get there. But it's kind of like a nostalgic thing going back to New York in January. But this is a great fight. I'm looking forward to it. I haven't done a bunch of studying yet on these two. I'm going to as obviously I'm working the show, but it's a fight that went that Shaw can win. It's going to be one of those kind of heavyweight scraps that are a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll have plenty on that next week.
Oh, score wise?
Yeah.
Yeah, I go 6. I don't know how important the fight is for this, but I'll go like a solid 6.
I think it's important for Shaw. Because I think he's like one phone call away from being in these conversations to fight someone like one of the top guys that's looking for one of these tune-up types of fights. He's not obligated to any network. Yeah. I think he's signed with Top Rank and DiBella together, but they can work through that. It's like 6.67 ish type of fight. This fight actually
any heavyweight with a zero is in the running for those kind of fights. So if you got to know, you've got money waiting, and managers and promoters know that. So
yep, absolutely. This fight actually just got canceled. Dylan Danis just pulled out of his fight with KSI. That was supposed to be over on DAZN.
Wow.
Shocked. I am shocked. I don't know much about Dylan Danis, but I know that he never fights. You just see his names always in these like Instagram posts with like some cryptic quote about any of these Jake Paul guys. Like, I think his claim to fame is that he's like friends with McGregor. He was supposed to fight KSI. I was like kind of somewhat intrigued. Like, I would have like probably pulled it up on my phone just to see how awful Danis is and like maybe watch him get sparked out. But we don't even get that anymore because he pulled out of the fight. This one doesn't even need a score because it's not happening. What do you think about that, Dylan Danis pulling out?
No, I'm not surprised at all. This fight, even if it was still on, it would have got a zero because the chances of it happening were slim to none. Yeah. So it doesn't even get him a score. But yeah, no, it's a zero because it's not happening now.
Why doesn't this KSI guy just fight Jake Paul? Like, just are they marinating that one too? Because that's like the YouTuber boxing Super Bowl. That's like the Pacquiao Mayweather.
KSI is not that bad. So I mean, he could actually beat Jake Paul. He's athletic guy. He comes in there. He's very awkward in the way he boxes in terms of a traditional boxing style. But he's really not that bad. He's a good athlete. He looks like he's fast and strong. So, yeah, I mean, that could derail the train as well. But, yeah, maybe they're building that up to be the big YouTube showdown. But I don't think Jake Paul wants that. Seems like he really kind of wants to make a run at this boxing thing and fight boxers someday.
I think he wants to – I think he's also be announcing a fight soon. I think he wants to – I think he's pretty dead set on, like, a fighter. Maybe it's like a Tommy Fury type before he goes that route.
Yeah.
Like KSI will always be there. For that, like, that fight is always there, so let me just try to build it up a little more by fighting like a fringe boxer. 21st, I actually like this fight a lot.
I think he'll go boxing until he loses, and then he'll go back to fighting one of these guys.
Right,
I think he is trying to make that run, which makes sense.
He can do that. I actually love this fight. Chris Eubank versus Liam Smith. January 21st. I'll give it a solid 7. I'm pretty generous today. Eubank, obviously, on the shit end of the side of the thing. Is that even a phrase? What the hell did I just say? Shit end of the stick?
Shit end of the stick, I think.
Shit end of the side, I said. Shit end of the stick Chris Eubank got from that Conor Benn thing. So he came out looking great in that whole scenario. He finds himself a good opponent, domestic scrap. Liam Smith had a few big wins last year. Solid 7. I'll tune in and check out the crowd and, you know, an afternoon like showing here in the States where, you know, get revved up. I like Eubank Smith.
Yeah, I am too, especially after how all that went down, the way he handled himself. I thought he was a gentleman in the way he took and handled everything and was very confident in himself. Liam Smith is tough. You know, he's one of those guys. He's always in a fight. So this will be a fun fight. This will be a fun afternoon scrap to watch and on a Saturday. I'm going 7-5 on this fight because I think I enjoy both those guys fighting and seeing them fight each other would be good.
Finally, last day of the year, or last day of January, I should say, or last weekend of January, was supposed to be an awesome day where we get Better BF Yard in the afternoon. Then we get Charlo Zoo at night. Obviously, Charlo Zoo is not happening, but we still get Better BF Yard in the afternoon here in the States. I actually like this fight a lot. I don't know how long it's going to last. I would love to see the over-under. We have DraftKings back. We're working with DraftKings again, so I'll have a pick for that. I'll give it a solid 8. 8 out of 10 because Better BF's a beast. Yard is going to sell out, and he's probably going to get sparked out spectacularly. Love that. And then hopefully gets us one step closer to Better BF Vival. So solid 8, Better BF Yard.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I'm going 8. I think Yard makes it entertaining. I think he's athletic enough. I think that you said he's gonna come out guns blazing until he gets caught. But I think Artur Beterbiev, his technique is just so solid. And he's so strong. It's just a matter of time until he breaks Yard in two. But while on the way there, it's gonna be a lot of fun.
Will Yard spar? Isn't he like notorious for not sparring? Like I remember when he was in the build up to Kovalev, it's like, yeah, his trainer doesn't believe in sparring. Is that the most asinine thing you ever heard?
That's very interesting. But again, like, he's an athletic guy and he can just use that, I guess. I guess they want to go in fresh, but yeah, I don't think that's going to work. Artur Beterbiev, I know for a fact from his sparring partners, he's got a slew of them. He spars like he fights. He's looking to knock you out. He's looking to hurt you. They pay their sparring partners well because when you're going to a Artur Beterbiev camp, you're going to get knocked out because that's just the way he trains.
Damn, imagine that.
So they're both on the opposite end of the spectrum. Oh, no. I have a couple friends who were going to go up there or guys that did go up there and they came back and they're like, yo, that guy is – it's not nice. He's rough. It's really, really bad.
Imagine that's like your – 2-week assignment. Like, oh, I'm gonna spar Artur Beterbiev every day.
I'm gonna go fight Beterbiev 3 times a week for the next 2 weeks.
Oh God! I mean, it'll make you. You'll learn a lot about yourself. But damn, take a toll. I actually heard he's like a nice, like a, have you ever interviewed him like on, like for a fighter interview? Like,
yes.
He has like the yep. Russian like disposition, and I know he's not, he's, he lives in Montreal, and but he is Russian, and like he doesn't really speak that much English, mm-hmm. but from everything I've seen and heard from him, he's like a really funny, like soft-spoken guy.
Very soft-spoken, very thoughtful. We had an a fighter interview. We actually spoke to him for much longer than we did for a lot of other people because he's just a, he's an interesting guy as well. But yeah, very soft-spoken. He's very religious. He's very like a, almost like pious. He's very within himself. Like you said, he's got that Russian disposition. Surprising. But also being across the table from him and just I was just looking at his hands and I'm like this guy is made to fight. His hands look like gnarled roots. They're giant. they're muscular. They're veiny. And like, I'm looking, I'm like, Jesus, the guy's fingers are big. He's just, yeah, he is a specimen for sure.
So that's a pretty solid January. You have to remember, like, in years past, when it was, like, just Showtime and HBO, like, there was nothing in January. You were lucky to get, like, one fight at the end of the month. Like, it was always the midpoint of December until about the midpoint of January. There was pretty much nothing. But now, like, we've spoken about in the past so many times on this show, it's like we're living in that golden era of watching fights and platforms, and so we get at least one fight every weekend in January. Obviously, the Charlo fight not being on there kind of sucks, but it's still a decent offering for January as we get closer to the big part of the boxing schedule. All right, this weekend, let's get into the big pay-per-view over on Showtime. Gervonta Davis, Hector Luis Garcia. This fight almost didn't happen. There was a real serious incident that occurred with Tank Davis and the mother of his child. After Christmas, I think there was an argument between Davis and the mother. According to police, he struck her, causing an abrasion on her lip. There was a 911 call where she said that he was trying to kill her. I've listened to it. I think a lot of people listened to it. It sounded pretty bad. Tank obviously has a past. We know this. Domestic violence. There's video of him at that basketball game. He's also awaiting trial in February for a hit and run where he struck a car in his Lamborghini. It was a pregnant woman in the car. He fled the scene. Three of the people in the car settled with him out of court. The pregnant woman said, no, I'm taking him to court. That's in February. There's a very good chance he could be locked up for a year. We'll learn about that in February. But all in all, the mother of his child changed the story. Said Gervonta did not harm her. Call was placed. She said a call was placed in a frantic moment. Fight is going on. Showtime found enough evidence there to have the fight go on. And I know Showtime takes these things very seriously. They've canceled fights in the past, most notably Rolly Romero. And Chris, a lot of media members rush to judgment. Some that we know, some dedicated full podcast articles with the impression that Davis was guilty. I didn't put any statements out there. I know you didn't either. Wait till you get all the evidence in there. We'll never know. We're never going to know what really happened. But what we do know is the fight's going on. And people that watch this show don't tune in to hear our thoughts on these types of things, which are important. They come to hear our thoughts on the fight. But we're getting a fight this weekend with Tank. But that was definitely a big story for a bunch of days.
Yeah, I did not think this fight was going to happen, honestly, just because everything that was going on. And some of the statements that Tank was putting out there. But messy. We still got the fight, and it's a good fight. So let's talk about that.
Let's talk about the fight because, right, that whole topic was broken down ad nauseum. So Tank's fighting. I like watching Tank fight. I know you do too. This is a real test for him. I know that Luis Hector Garcia is a 130-pound champion. Got to mention that as well. But not like Tank is a big guy. So whenever I hear like, oh, he's Hector, Luis Garcia is moving up in weight. He's fighting a smaller guy. No. Like Tank isn't that big. So I have no problem with him fighting a 130-pounder because that's like honestly where Tank should fight. I think he's fighting above his natural weight. Where should we start? Like, I guess we'll start with Hector, with Luis Hector Garcia before we get to Tank. Unconventional rise to where he is. A lot of his fights were in the Dominican Republic. Didn't really see much of him. And then he burst on the scene a very big way where he stepped in on short notice to fight Chris Colbert. And not only did he beat Chris Colbert, he made – I'd never seen this before – Chris Colbert running in that fight, running to the finish line, not running to win, running not to get sparked out and lose. That was his big coming out party for Luis Garcia. And then he followed it up with a big win over Roger Gutierrez. This guy deserves it. He deserves a spot. He's a very active puncher, throws around, I think it's like 60 punches around. We'll see if he keeps that volume up against the best counter puncher in boxing. But you got to tip your hat to Luis Garcia. This guy had an opportunity, had two opportunities in last year, probably the breakout fight of the year. Now he's fighting Tank in the first big pay-per-view of the year. So hats off to Luis Garcia, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, very surprising what he was able to do with Colbert, who's normally a very, very good defensive fighter. He dropped him. He like you said, he had him trying to get to the finish line. And very, very impressive. And he comes back with a good win over Roger Gutierrez. And here we are with Davis. Davis is an entirely different animal than the rest of these guys. So we'll see how he handles that. And I agree. The size thing, Gervonta, he's that good. We talked about the women and how they can move different weight classes. It's because of power. Tank has power. He's knocked out 40-pounders. He knocked out Mario Barrios. He dropped them, you know, 2-3 times in that fight. He went up to 47 after that. So, like, he's got power, so he can move like that. But really, he's really a 130-pounder. He's a small guy. He just packs such a punch, and he's able to knock these guys out. It's surprising that, you know, it's like, oh, he's fighting a 30-pounder. Well, he's a 30-pounder. It's just that he hits that hard.
Yeah.
But, yeah, with Garcia, I mean, he's got a kind of a traditional stance and style. You know, he's a good boxer. He's not a huge puncher. I don't know if it's really going to be a power thing with Tank. Tank generally walks through guys' power anyway. But he's going to have to box, and he's got to box real smart and stay away from that big left hand.
Yeah, Garcia throws 56 punches per round. That's right around the 135-pound average. That's over his last three fights. A little bit of a headhunter. Garcia is only 13% of his landed punches are to the body, where Davis is like 33%, which was really good. He's going to have to figure out a way to – this is what every Tank opponent has to figure out how to do – is jab, stay out of the way of those power shots, but still score yourself, which I didn't expect Rolly to do. But that fight was a fencing match, Rolly and Tank, where – I think Tank averaged like less than 20 punches around, and Rolly was like just around there too. Like, they were afraid to, like, Rolly was afraid to engage, but you gotta like kind of do what Leo Santa Cruz did. You have to like attack Tank, and obviously keep that in the back of your mind. Like, I might get knocked out, but you're not going to win just sitting there staring at him waiting, you know, winning that type of fight. I think that Garcia's got to go for it, you know, throw those 55 to 60 punches around. What's the path for victory for Hector Garcia?
Well, you mentioned Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz, he boxed well in that fight. He landed some big shots. I think Santa Cruz was expecting to be able to hurt Tank. Tank was walking through those shots, literally got hit right before the knockout, got hit with a big shot, and Santa Cruz threw the same punch.
Three times.
Rips that highlight. Yeah, that highlight uppercut. It was beautiful, a thing of beauty. Hector Garcia needs to box the way he boxes. He's got to not fall in love with being able to land clean on Tank, because sometimes he might land clean. Don't expect it. Don't look at it. Don't look at your work. Land the shot, keep moving, keep boxing, and stay off the ropes. Santa Cruz messed up there. He stayed on the ropes too long, threw the right hand, got caught with that big uppercut. He's got to box smart, honestly. He's got to, and not fall in love with the landed punches that he does catch Tank with, and just box. Be smart, stay away from the power.
It's going to be a tough assignment for him. Tank's talking him up, which I like when an opponent does that.
Runs a long time.
Yeah, he's talking him up. He says he's hungry. He wants what I have. Let's go over to Tank. One of my favorite fighters to watch. And some interesting numbers on Tank, Chris. I think you'll get a kick out of this. Over his last 11 fights, Tank is averaging 34 punches thrown around. He's the lowest in all of boxing among championship caliber fighters. But 93% knockout rate, which is third in all of boxing among active fighters. 47.1 power connect rate, second behind Lomachenko. anyone that watches Tank fight knows this to be true. He walks a tightrope. I call it that Canelo style. Jermell Charlo does the same thing. Low output, high accuracy, game-changing power. I think it's awesome to watch because it's waiting for that bomb to get detonated. But there's a flip side to it. You're giving away rounds. He gave away rounds, not so much against Rolly, but he gave away rounds against Santa Cruz. He gave away rounds against Barrios. Not because he's getting outboxed, simply not throwing punches, waiting for that moment where his opponent slips up. How much longer can Tank Davis walk that tightrope?
Yeah, and that's what I mean with Hector Garcia. His path to victory is to throw and take advantage of those lapses and Tank. Because Tank's looking to just detonate that bomb. He's wading through. He's walking through punches. He wants to get to that position where he can land that big power shot. Like you said, I mean, those numbers are ridiculous. The fact that he is so inactive, but his knockout percentage is that high because he's waiting on that big shot. He's looking for that perfect opportunity. And Garcia just needs to keep moving and not be there to get hit with that bomb, with that detonation.
But what do you think of it, of that style from Tank? Was that something you would like? I feel like it's not something a trainer would teach.
No.
It only works for a certain amount of fighters. Like, I think a Devin Haney could give him issues because, like, we've yet to see someone put a consistent jab in Tank's face. Shakur can give him issues because of his jab, too, and his length. It's interesting. Like, I obviously it's awesome to watch, and I think it's such an incredible, like, stat. But how, like, is that sustainable against the higher echelon type of fighters, which I think that Tank has no choice but to go for after this fight?
I don't like how much Tank gets hit. He gets hit clean. I don't know how sustainable that is. You know, he's so in love with that power, and he trusts his power that he's willing to take a shot to give a shot. I don't love that style of boxing. It makes for a hell of a fight, though. That's why it's one of the reasons I like watching him so much. And he always goes for the knockout. Like you said, it's not something that your coach is necessarily going to teach you how to fight that way. He might show you certain things, but he's chosen to make that his style. Where he's like, I'm going to get you, and when I get you, you're going away. So he's got that mentality. He really does believe in that power. So it makes for fun. Even for a guy who doesn't throw a lot of punches, it's fun to watch. I normally like guys who are really busy and throw combinations. Tank is not one of those guys, but he brings power. He hurts guys. He's very technically sound when he does do things. It looks really good when he does what he's doing. But yeah, with the other guys in the division, like you mentioned, Shakur's tough because you can't hit him. So if you don't throw that much and you can't hit the guy, you can't knock out what you can't hit. And with Haney's so busy. He's so long. He boxes. That's the style that I think Hector Garcia needs to employ in order to win this fight. That would be a really tough fight as well. But he's got that fight-changing power. And I've said it before on podcasts. It's not always the one punch that knocks you out that changes the fight. It could be the punch that hurts you early on or lets you know, like, oh, man, this guy's dangerous, changes the outcome of the fight because now I got to change my style because I can't get hit with that shot again. I've had guys throw hooks past my face that missed, and I was like, nope, can't get hit with that. That was way too fast, way too hard. I got to be smart, and I got to box a certain way now. So he has that game-changing power, and he believes in it, as he should. It hasn't let him down.
Especially, too, like his body attack, I think is really impressive, especially being 5'5½", which he's listed at. Like, he's going to be the shorter guy. He's going to be the shorter guy against Garcia by a long, long shot. He's going to be the shorter guy against Haney, going to be the shorter guy against Shakur. I think he's the shorter guy in this fight. You better have a good body attack. It's like what we see with Canelo when he fights these 6 foot and taller guys as Canelo just hammers to the body. So that's one thing from Tank that he kind of changes up his output. When he does throw, he does go to the body. And like we're talking about him giving away rounds and this, that, and the other, but I do commend him for the Isak Cruz when he did hurt his hand. He practically won the fight with one hand boxing. So I do think he has that boxing ability.
Yep.
I do think he can jab and like he could change it up. I think he's that talented. It's going to be interesting as he heads up bigger competition if he increases that volume, if he can get away with walking that tightrope, which we saw Canelo like not be able to do. Like his power kind of went away and he fought bigger guys and that doesn't work all the time. But the guy that he will be fighting next, we think is Ryan Garcia. I hope that Ryan Garcia would be in attendance. I hope that there's some type of announcement after. But Ryan Garcia is a tall opponent. Like, he doesn't have the best jab. We've talked about his jab on this show. But I just see Ryan Garcia just using it as a range finder and keeping it out there and like keeping like Tank away. But I don't want to look too far ahead to the Ryan Garcia fight, but that's what's next for Tank if everything comes through in April, I think April 15th. That's a big one.
Yeah, you talked about, you know, when he fights guys at different sizes, guys who are taller, he goes to the body attack. That reminds me of the Mario Barrios fight. I mean, Tank was ripping the body shot. Actually dropped Barrios with a body shot, and he's another guy. He probably, in terms of stature, he's got to be the same size as Ryan. I would think they're probably the same height, 5'9", 5'10", long, you know, long body type, and Tank was able to break him down, especially the body. And like you said, like with Ryan, not a big jabber, but his hook is so fast. He has such tremendous speed, and the left hook versus a southpaw is a very good weapon. So it's an interesting matchup based on styles and attributes of Ryan, you know, his physical attributes and his speed, and then also Tank in terms of his style and his stance. That's a really fun fight for me. When I go down to study that fight and I really look at them technically and I put those things together, that's going to be a really fun fight to analyze, and hopefully it'll be a fun fight if it happens.
Yeah. The trial, I know a lot of people don't want to talk about that. I mean, there's a good chance that he does get into some type of legal behind bars or some type of home confinement from the hit and run. But there is precedent for this, and it's his former promoter, Floyd Mayweather. I'm sure you remember this. Before he fought Cotto, there he received a sentence from the judge. Judge said, yes, you can fight Cotto. After it, you got to spend 90 days in jail. And he had to do that. I mean, there is precedent for this. Like, I could see that happening again for Tank. And like we said, we're not legal experts. We're not going to talk about these types of things. But like, there is a way around that happening, and where the Tank Ryan fight happens in April. Tank has his legal issues and figure that out. You know, he fights in January, gets the big payday. Fights in April, gets the big payday. Things that you have to talk about when you are in the boxing world. Interesting. One of the lights just went out in the studio. Does that mean we should wrap it up?
My lights are good.
We got one light out, but we still have this one hovering over me. I do want to talk about Boots, though. We'll talk Boots quickly. Boots Ennis is fighting on this card. Karen Chuhadzian, who is rated fourth in the IBF. The reason that Boots is fighting Karen Chuhadzian is because he's the highest-rated welterweight in the IBF. Ortiz, I think, is rated higher, but he's fighting Stanionis. So Ennis has been playing in that he's been playing that game. He's been playing this game, waiting patiently. His last fight with Castillo Clayton was titled an eliminator. Now this is titled an IBF interim title fight. And I know no one likes to follow those things, but the winner of this fight would be in a position to induce one of the two scenarios. Force Spence Crawford, winner, to fight him, or fight for the full IBF title if the winner opts to vacate, which both of those situations can happen. We know this from Boots. We want him to fight better competition. It's not that easy getting these guys in the ring with him, so therefore he has to fight the Karens of the world, the Castillo Claytons, and play that game until we figure out what the hell is going on with Spence and Crawford. That's just the name of the game for Boots.
Yeah, I saw a statement that he put out there. He said, I think that Spence will fight me, and that fight will happen down the line, but I got to get past these guys, and I like that. I like when these guys stay busy. He's young. There's no reason to stay out of the ring and wait for those guys who are at the top. He's going to get there. Might as well stay busy and keep knocking these guys out. But, we glossed over Stanionis and Virgil Ortiz because we're going to cover that in later shows. But, man, I'm excited about that group right there, that group of young welterweights. You've got Boots, you've got Virgil Ortiz, you've got Stanionis, and they're fighting. So that's a good thing. But potentially, once that fight clears, the Stanionis and Virgil Ortiz, and we have a clear winner, makes sense to me that they get Boots, and then that guy then moves up to that upper echelon where he can fight an Errol Spence or a Terrence Crawford, you know? That's old school. That's the way it goes. You beat the guy to beat the guy, and then you get the shot.
Yeah, we talked about we talked about puzzle pieces before. Like, the welterweight division is a freaking mess, and obviously the biggest pieces of that puzzle are Spence and Crawford. If they somehow come to an agreement and they fight, I wouldn't be shocked if they fight two times. They could fight three times. That leaves guys like Boots out in the cold. That leaves guys like Virgil Ortiz out in the cold. So it would make sense for Boots to fight Ortiz. That would be awesome. Like that's like something we'll have to worry about and talk about if that does happen. But I think 2023. What'd you say?
I said we're many parts away from
that. We're many pieces of that, but there's a big pile of puzzle pieces, and that's like in that pile somewhere. That when it comes to welterweight. And I tweeted out like on New Year's Day like five things I want to see happen in 2023, and like at the top was welterweight clarity, like movement. Like we can't have another year of Spence fighting once, Crawford fighting once, Boots waiting, Virgil Ortiz waiting. This is one of the best divisions in boxing, so let's see some movement. So that's that. That is the pay-per-view on Showtime. We'll have a show on Monday reviewing it all. We talked about Andrade before. He's on the card. Rashidi Ellis is on the card. Brandon Lee buried on the card. I'd like to know what his plan is. He's a really hard-hitting 140-pounder. First big one of the year. I'll be tuned in, working for CompuBox. Follow along with Chris. Should be a good one, Chris. What do you got planned for the weekend?
Nothing. That's the only thing I got. I'm going to be watching the fights, hanging out, chilling. You know, the last couple weekends at the holidays, I'm happy they're in the rear view and I can just kind of chill this weekend. And before January picks up, and I got a lot of traveling coming up between for fights. So.
And we have some fun things coming your way. Always like and subscribe over on Inside Boxing Live YouTube page. We have our Boxing Combine coming out in the next few weeks. Some other fun content we're going to be putting there. These shows live there. Breakdowns. All that and more. Yeah, man. I'm excited to kick off this year. First show of 2023 in the books. As always, protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up. Stay out of those DMs.